just the very end of what you were saying about older guys, how good a teaching experience it was.
Yes,
I think we can go on.
What was the date in which Alderdice opened?
February 1927. And that was the beginning of my learning experience and my teaching experience at the same time.
How many years did you teach there?
I taught until I retired in 1965.
Were plays a larger part of the curriculum in the early days than later?
Well, it wasn't a big part, but I did there too. You know, it was 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, so I did things that were would be suitable for that age group. And there, too, I did scenes from A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I don't remember this boy's name, but he played. I didn't do the whole play. I just did the fairy scenes, and the boy that played Bottom was so good, and there was a Dorothy Grody, I believe, who played Titania, and she eventually became an attorney. And then I also did in pantomime Oscar Wilde's Happy Prince, and James Spire was the Happy Prince. And I remember in rehearsals he wore a beautiful shirt, and that's the time when I was going to Awani, Camp Awani, and he would, and I talked about the shirt so much that he gave it to me. I used to wear it at camp. And then, as far as the English was concerned, of course, as they added a grade, you see, each semester or each year. So I was being advanced, and that's, you can see too, where Alderdice was the greatest learning experience of all, because I kept moving up, and it meant working with new material and organizing it and getting it in so that it would, I could communicate more effectively with the students.
You taught both of us, at least you taught me in 11th grade, I assume.
Yes.
No, 12th.
Well, my question was, did you ever move up to 12th grade? I know that I had you in 11th grade. Did
yes.
you also teach 12th grade?
Yes, I taught 12th grade for many years. And really, I would say that so many of my former students are good friends of mine today. We've been in communication, and I had so many that I thought a great deal of. I admired them, and they have developed into fine human beings and making tremendous contributions in their world.
Did you have a preference as to age level and grade level?
Well, I think that I enjoyed most working with the seniors, and at that time too, as there were clubs, and I had this group called the Players Guild, and we did like one act plays, and then bigger things. And I think I did mention Midsummer Night's Dream and The Happy Prince. And then as the student matured, he got a little older, then we did more bigger productions, like I did The Taming of the Shrew in modern dress. And in that was the Catherine was played by Lillian Shane. Her father taught psychology at Carnegie Tech. And Robert Lando was Petruchio, and he has a big advertising agency today. And and then there was the Harold Rosenblum, he's deceased. they wore beautiful clothes. They wore sport clothes in the first and second acts, and then in the later acts, evening clothes, and then in the last act, they wore formal clothes, tails, and evening dresses. And then I ought to mention, too, about Mr. Fitzpatrick, who was the art teacher. And we did a number of things together. Now, later, I did Molière School for Husbands. And that had been produced in New York by the Theatre Guild. And Osgood Perkins, that's the father of Tony Perkins, played the lead, Scannarell. Now, Osgood Perkins was in Pittsburgh at the Nixon, and Mr. Fitzpatrick, the art teacher, I said, he's in Pittsburgh. I'd love to talk to him because we're going to do this school for husbands. And he said, well, let's go. So we went backstage, and I said, Mr. Perkins, we're from the Alder Dice High School, and we'd like to do a school for husbands. Don't you think we have a lot of nerve? And he said, no, I don't. He said, sit down, tell me about it. And so when we were finished, he said, I want you to write to the Theater Guild and tell them that you want the working script. And by that time, I knew, too, where the music, the costumes. Now, we couldn't afford to have all the costumes, but Mr. Devers, who was the principal at Alderdice then, he conceded and permitted us to rent the more important the costumes for the more important play, and that I thoroughly enjoyed doing.
Did you have much guidance from the school system as to what you were to teach or where you were on your own to develop your curriculum in all these courses?
Well, really on our own. Now, Lois Gross, who became the chairman, she was at the head of the English and down at the board in secondary education, but she had been a teacher at Alder Dice, and but we weren't told what to do or how to do. I mean, the curriculum there was there. We knew in general that if you were to teach in 11th grade American literature, which I think you had, and then of course most of my time was spent in the English literature, and I was more comfortable with that material than I was with the American. And there was something that I wanted to tell you. Well, at any rate, I will say that, you know, you do learn by doing. And I would try to supplement whatever the text was, to supplement it with additional material that would enrich it and make it more palatable to students. But I really feel that, as I said a moment ago, that you learn by doing, and the more I was doing, the more experience I got, and I knew exactly, I would never go into a class without knowing what I was to do and what its purpose was. And that's why my dear brother would always say, what is she doing? She's taught so many years, you know. Now, my sisters, Jeanette and Esther and I, took the first sabbatical that was offered in the city. That was in 1955. And we went to Europe and to Israel, and we were gone for 3 months. And when I returned to school, The principal at that time then was Mr. McClymonds. And he informed me that I was to teach a class in speech. And I was absolutely furious because I had not been told anything, and I didn't have an opportunity to develop anything. And that was it, just say, you know, teach this class in speech.
Had they ever had speech
classes? No, it was just being introduced at that time. Now, I was fortunate in this respect that particular summer, there was a lady who was giving a course at Carnegie Tech in speech, and she was from Columbia, and most of the people in the class were quite young, and so I was older, and I could identify more closely with the instructor. And she was very, very helpful and gave me a lot of material, which I used and developed. And eventually, I did revise and then help to develop the speech course in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. And part of it was the technical, working with the voice and doing work in phonetics. And the other part was giving speeches and starting with a very simple type of speech and then progressing to more involved types.
When you took such a course during the summer as you did in preparation for teaching a course, were you given help by the Board of Education? Did they finance your taking of this course, or was it
No, I did that on my own. No. I was told I was going to teach the course, but I didn't go to them and ask them for any financial help. And I just took it because I felt that if this is what I have to do, why, I ought to have some background in it. And you can be working with plays, but I felt the more practical thing in this course was to show how they could communicate more effectively with people, or if in job opportunities, and but from this lady from Columbia, it was more. She emphasized phonetics, and I felt that was important. And the students did work with a mirror, so they could see the shape of the the lip, the tongue, the teeth, and. So part of that was phonetics, and then we started with simple speeches, which was the personal, biographical, and then working to more involved forms of speech, and demonstration speeches of different kinds. And so.
Would you care to comment on your relationship to your principal? While you were in Alderdice?
Yes. Well, the first principal was Mr. Devers. And he was a rigid disciplinarian, but I respected him. When he would visit a class, he would tell you afterwards. I mean, he just didn't send a report into the board without talking to you and telling you where he felt that you were weak or where he felt you could improve, or what if he felt that in certain areas you were effective. I remember I was teaching this class, and maybe it was Tennyson's Idylls of the King, and I showed that the fable and then the parable, I spoke of parables, and I mentioned a few in the New Testament, and the allegory, and so forth. And afterwards, he commented on the fact that I had referred to the New Testament, which, I mean, I was doing it not for any religious reason, but as a type of writing or a type of, you know, speaking. And he happened to be in the class when I was showing the relationship of a fable and how the moral is carried through these simple forms of storytelling. Let's see what else.
Was this an adverse reaction to you?
No, no, indeed. No, he was very pleased with what I had done in that lesson. But I appreciated that, the fact that he would visit. And of course, I'm sure the principals are required to turn in a report on an individual teacher. And I don't know of anyone, perhaps Mr. McClyman's, but Dr. Devers took notes and he talked to you afterwards. But that was the only time that I felt that there was a purpose to that. And of course, all that was sent to the board eventually, you know, whatever information that had been sent to them concerning the individual teacher.
As a teacher, did you ever feel that you had a role in running the school, determining policy?
No. I don't. It would be so minimal that I felt that in my own little domain, that to establish, to have communication with the students, to try to project as much as I could for their development, to see how they develop, I always came to school early. I was always there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they knew that from 8:30 they could come in and get help. And many did, and if they had, especially with the writing, and they would come in, and I'd go over the work and make suggestions for revision and so on. And I must tell you about this one student. He was very shy person. He was not a strong student in English, and I would have, they knew that I was there from 8:30 to give help. Well, he was writing this short theme, and the spelling was bad, the mechanics were just awful, and I'd have him come in and each morning, and we'd go over it. After a number of these sessions, I said, "Now, Elliot, I want you to take this to Mr. McClyman. I would like him to see what you've done." So he took it down, and fortunately, Mr. McClyman wrote, "Good work, Elliot. Congratulations." Well, I suppose Elliot felt that after all these sessions in the morning, well, maybe this did pay off a little bit. And this young man today teaches chemistry at Bowling Green in Ohio. His mother is a very fine person, modest, and I also had the sister. And I said, "Do you know of anyone who can shorten dresses and so on?" Why, she said, "My mother can." And ever since then, we've been going to Elliot's mother, and she was a good friend, a very good friend. And of course, he has done so well, and so has the sister. I never had the sister. Oh, I had her in speech class. That's right. And we respect Hadassapi very much for her ambitions for her children, Elliot teaches chemistry, he lectures, he goes, and he was a very, very shy high school boy. Never would open his mouth, because once in a chemistry class, he said, Mr. Hackett, what is a thermometer? And Mr. Hackett looked at me and said, why, Elliot, that's a thermometer. And everybody laughed. And after that, Elliot wasn't speaking up in class. So from this shy, reticent boy in high school, he has developed into a fine young man, married, has children, and has done very well in his profession.
You are remembered among many of your students as the teacher who taught them how to write. What led you to this kind of emphasis on your teaching?
Well, I don't just like to say this, that I was a perfectionist, but if it wasn't right, I mean, that I wasn't looking for perfection, but to make clear your thinking, that if you wrote and rewrote, that you would find that eventually it would be just what you would want to say on paper. And so that's why I had this parade of people who would come in the morning, and then I'd go on freaking, and they'd rewrite it. And to try to show that there is the satisfaction of doing the very best to your ability and to pulling it out of a student and to prove to him that he can do better than he thinks he can do. And that, I think, was my chief purpose in teaching.
In your teaching career, did you see any changes in the character and nature of the student body?
Well, yes, I think that it would be obvious that when Alter Dice first opened, the classes were not oversized. We worked with smaller groups, and it was really on a more personal basis. I think that teachers then had a very close relationship, and especially if you were doing an extracurricular activity. For instance, Betty Arnold, who did the newspaper, and Laura Ziegler, who did who had the orchestra, and Miss Steiner, who had the chorus, and then I would do the plays, and very often it was a combination of the three of us, like the music, the orchestra, and the voice. And then, of course, I didn't have a speech class, but the plays that I did. So we worked together and evolved something that was as professional as you could expect from a high school group. And we didn't do, first of all, whatever I did, I felt it should have a literary value to begin with. I wasn't doing things that I didn't want to bother with things that weren't well written to begin with, and the purpose was to show the student, to give him a taste of good theater, and I didn't explain it in those terms, but I think the things that we did, like Widder Binner and Shakespeare, Molière, and then at one time we did an original musical review, and there is this young man by the name of Jerry Feldman, who's in California, and he writes music, and he wrote the music, and then some of the kids wrote the lyrics to the song, and that was what's his name, Marty Allen, was in this show, and the particular scene that he was in was that it's always the kid that's late for class, and all on the stage it was empty except in the one side in the background with these lockers, and the bell's ringing, and he's trying to get all these things out of his locker and so on. And that was one of the scenes in the musical we did. Oh, it was called the IQ. That's what it was called.
For how long were you in charge of the place?
Well, all the time that... I guess up until the time that I was to develop the speech, I was to teach speech. I had a few classes in English and also speech. So by that time, then, I wasn't doing the plays anymore.
Because I don't, and, well, you had mentioned your Players Club.
The Players Guild. Well, that was quite early. That was at the time of Aaron Levinson and Edward Andrews and Sarah Bell Bowarski, and that was in the beginning about the Players Guild.
When we were in school, all they had was the class play.
Yeah.
For the seniors, I don't remember any other.
Nor do I, but that was in the late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
Your teaching career spanned many more years than just that.
Yeah, well, by that time, see, I didn't do the plays anymore because I was concentrating on the development of this speech course.
Well, you had said that was 1953, so that was after I was out of Alderdice. There seemed to be very little of that kind of thing while I was there.
Yeah.
And it seems a lot.
You had closer relationships to your students than in the early years, you feel, than
in the
later period, or was this a function of working with them in the dramatics rather than just in English?
Well,
class?
I think that, of course, when I was doing the plays, that I did get to know them, you know, more intimately, and however, there was always that teacher-student relationship. I respected them, they respected me. And then later, as I say, they became personal friends, good friends. And I should mention Aaron Levinson particularly, because in later years, when a student needed financial help or needed a scholarship, I could always call on Aaron, and he would see that the student got the help that he needed. And he did it very quietly, unostentatiously, and it was very gratifying to me that I could call on him. And then if we had the time, I could think of others, too, that with whom I still have a very good relationship. And I respect them, and they're good friends of mine, and I enjoy the fact that now that we're talking about it, I'm putting it into words, it's really nice to have that relationship with former students.
Did the status of the teaching profession change at all during your career?
Well, I think so. I can only say that I know in the beginning the teachers they were very serious about, maybe serious isn't right, and I loathe the word dedicated, but you had a job to do and you wanted to do it to the best of your ability. There was a sense of a professionalism without being stuffy about it, but to give as much as you possibly could to the students, so that when he got out, he had he had confidence in his background that he could go on and produce in the areas that he wanted to, and. Oh, very often many of us would get letters and say thank you, and I can't thank you enough, and this and that. And that was nice.
did the coming of the teachers' union must have started after your...
No, it started before. I was always a member of the Pittsburgh Teachers Association and the state and the national, but I never joined the union. Of course, today the whole picture has changed, and I'm sure that everybody that is in teaching belongs to a union. But I didn't then, and I